Welcome to New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here this afternoon with Kenny Eck. Kenny grew up on a family farm, and I'm sure we'll hear more about that. And this is not some little farm either. His first company at the age of seven, buying, selling, and raising livestock. Although I guess you would have been buying, raising, and then selling livestock. See if I got this right. His childhood dream was to go to medical school, but it's ultimately in 2017 when you pivoted and started Patient Sortal. When seeing the need to provide healthcare data management, care coordination, and continuity of care for underrepresented populations. That's a mouthful, but I'm sure you will articulate that. Today, though, you're specifically focused on providing healthcare to returning citizens, which those of you who've been listening know that that's not so much the healthcare side, but just taking care of returning citizens is a huge passion of mine. So for full transparency, and we did not plan it this way, my wife and I will be making an investment into Patient Sortal today. So just total transparency as we do this interview. So Kenny, sorry for the long introduction. Thank you and welcome.
No, Jeff, thank you. And thanks you and Shelly for everything you guys are doing in this space for, returning citizens and just helping our mission here at Patient Sortal.
It's fun when you can lock arms with people who've got a similar mission. So look, you've got a really interesting background. Why don't you give us a high level where you grew up, kind of where you went to school, and then high level of your career. And then we'll dive in deeper as we go forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. You set it off pretty well. It was a mouthful. Life is a mouthful right now for us. I was born and raised in a small town on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. It was a 2,500 acre farm. We have corn, wheat, soybean, barley, straw, all the commodities you could have there. We have 12 chicken houses. Each of those chicken houses hold up to 35,000 chickens. Within a 10 week period, we grow a 10 pound bird and then you have a 2 week layout. So that keeps us busy. I grew up picking up those chickens and managing those houses up till the end of high school, which I say I retired from. Longhorn cattle. We have a huge pig operation now. And then my brother recently just bought 8 greenhouses. So we have hydroponic lettuce and offer that to schools in the area. So the farms definitely kept us busy.
Do you have a favorite part of the farm?
It's just the freedom, right? The farming for me, it just gets you away from the noise that the world has. And that's why I like living on the farm and traveling into the city versus living in the city and working in the city.
Oh, I can appreciate it. I have 7 acres, so nothing like you have 40 minutes from here. And if for more, I live. My wife knows that when I got to go mow the yard, which I really do, that it's half of it's just to get away in nature and to see all the wild animals. And so I can resonate, although I would love to resonate on 2,500 acres.
It's a blessing. You didn't really realize it as a kid because you were constantly working, developing the work ethic that got us where we are today. Like my brother and sister and I are all entrepreneurs, all in several companies. It's been a blessing. I mean, the best thing for me is on these farms is I'm a big outdoorsman, whether it's whitetail deer hunting or, just going out duck hunting, do something. That's what I really love to do.
Tell us your kind of schooling background or anything in between that you want to share before we then get to Patient Sortal.
Absolutely. Grew up in a small town, went to public high school, first generation college student, really didn't have a plan to go to college, but my parents wanted me to. Ended up applying and getting right into Winthrop University. It's Clemson's sister school right in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And it was a blessing. It was a smaller school that allowed me to just be one-on-one with the professors, build real relationships with friends. And I was close enough to home to visit, but I was far enough away where my dad didn't put me to work at the beginning and end of the day. So that was the main goal there. And then I left there. I wanted to pursue becoming a doctor of osteopathic medicine, which is a DO for those individuals who don't know.
Yep.
You have your MD and DO. And my passion was to go into cardiology and help patients with chronic conditions and get them up on their feet and away from, those chronic conditions and the exacerbations of what those do to your life and health. What I did was went to go get my master's degree in physiology, and University of South Carolina had an awesome program, but the University of Delaware let me do that program in less than a year. So I went up to the University of Delaware, got a master's in applied physiology with a focus on exercise, clinical exercise physiology, really focusing on those cardiovascular pulmonary issues heading towards DO school. And I did that in 8 months. Don't recommend many people doing that. Wow. You're doing 2 years of school in 8 months while shadowing a doctor, while doing rotations. And it was just a lot. I made it work, but it was a lot.
Why did you try to do it in 8 months?
time. You know, it was like med school is a 4-year journey, and then you have a couple years after that before you really start getting into it. And you're looking at it, you're like, I'm graduating college, I'm 22. If I do this master's in 2 years, I'll be 24. And then 4 more years, I'll be 29. You know, before I come out, which is where I am today. And I feel like I've accomplished a lot by going that avenue. But then I left that, Jeff, and then I went and got a master's in business and economics. I accelerated that too and got that in a year. So 3 degrees in 5.5 years. It was awesome. I mean, it was a journey, but I wouldn't change for the world.
Tell us a little about what you're doing today.
Today, what we're doing is we manage the healthcare for men and women who are returning from incarceration and coming back into our neighborhoods and our society. We provide superior level healthcare and continuity of care for these individuals, working 18 months pre-release, preparing them for what healthcare looks like out in the community, and just making sure they get primary care and referrals out to specialists, behavioral health, substance abuse, whatever it may be, so that that's one less barrier to their reentry.
So how did you get interested in this?
So the whole passion, you know, I stepped away from DO school because, you know, I found out you didn't have to be a doctor to really make impact from a medical lens, and got into this space to streamline transitions of care. There's several transitions in care that needed to be approached. You have pediatric to adult care, adult to geriatrics, and you have students that go to college. And then you also have one of the largest transitions of care today that was unmanaged. And that was men and women who are returning to society. You know, you get your healthcare treatment while you're incarcerated through one door. When you're out in the community, you have to find primary care providers, and there just weren't any. So we got into that space because we saw an opportunity to just meet the need of hundreds of thousands of people that will directly affect them and indirectly affect our communities, their families. You know, it's been a blessing.
How would you best describe who you are in the context of where you're at in your life journey? It's an easy question.
I'm right where I belong right now. You know, okay. What I mean? It's every day I'm learning. You know, it's one of those things where we have grit and just tenacity in our company to where we're comfortable being uncomfortable. And I don't know if that's because I've smashed my fingers almost every day on the farm with a hammer and know that I still have 1,000 nails I need to drive in, but that's just where I'm at. So right now I'm just like a sponge. I'm surrounding myself by thought leaders, you know, faith-based leaders, different experts in the industry, and just sucking in as much knowledge and then just applying that across the field of healthcare. You know, it's a completely underrepresented population, and we have the ability to build a superior healthcare system or with this knowledge for a population that's just never treated.
Mm-hmm. How would you say you are trying to change the world, whether that be some big, hairy, audacious goal or some little thing? How are you trying to change the world?
So, Jeff, healthcare is complex, right? It's complex for you. It's complex for me. As somebody that's in the medical space, I can't even spell half the medications that patients get, right? My job in the world and what I'm trying to change is just removing all the administrative, tedious burdens involved in healthcare for patients that need healthcare. There's plenty of doctors out there that can provide the highest quality of care, but there's so many administrative burdens to receiving that. And that's why I'm here. It's just to streamline that.
Can you articulate for us the problem that you're trying to solve? And I think the way that the best way that I'd love for you to answer that is, if I am incarcerated, give me a sense of what my health is, how am I getting treated today? And then what does that transition look like? And then also, how big is this opportunity or problem, however you want to look at it?
Absolutely. So Jeff, let's walk down this path of a man or woman who has been incarcerated. And I'm talking specifically about men or women incarcerated in a prison setting. Over a year of incarceration, they've been sentenced. While you're incarcerated, within 4 hours, you get a medical, dental, substance abuse, and behavioral health assessment to determine if there's any infectious disease, what those ongoing healthcare plans are, and then you're incarcerated. During a year of incarceration, you are eating starches and greases every day. Eventually, you're developing prediabetes, a high A1C, and then diabetes. You have low back pain. You're living on a metal bed frame and a 1-inch mattress. You don't have access to the lotions that these individuals have, or chemicals, or all these beauty products. So you're getting dermatitis. And then you're getting asthma due to just the air quality, poor circulation and stuff. These secondary things that happen to men and women who are incarcerated, not due to their sentence. So as a person who's incarcerated for a year, you are going in to do your sentence, but you're coming out with all these complex chronic conditions. We are population health experts in this space. We run more data analytics. Everything we do is data driven. We capture records on every patient that's incarcerated coming into our system and make sure they get a data-driven approach to what their healthcare looks like. If I have a chronic condition just naturally from being in a correctional system for a year and I'm being released, I am making one of the largest transitions of care from a healthcare system that's inside to a very complicated healthcare system out here in the community that we all access every day. And let's just talk about what that transition looks like. These individuals are coming out with at least one chronic condition. If you're over a year of incarceration, you're on numerous medications, and I'm being released, auto-assigned into a health insurance plan through Medicaid or Medicare, less than 30 days of medication, and I have to navigate what these next steps in my care plan is while navigating housing, employment, finding my family, reunification, doing all of these things, focus on reentry. Our chief growth officer was formerly incarcerated, said it's like learning how to drive on the on-ramp at 95. You don't even know what the blinker is, right? So there's a lot. These individuals have obligations as probation and parole to meet, you know, technical violations. And if they don't get seen by a doctor within 30 days, they're getting flagged and possibly reincarcerated. So the only way for them to find providers to date is to walk in the emergency room. You and I couldn't go find a new primary care provider that had availability for us within 120 days. It's just not, it's not happening.
I get unfortunate chronic sinus infections. It's like you call them, oh yeah, I can see you in about 4 to 6 weeks. Oh, well, that's really great. I mean, you got to find one, and then you actually got to find one that has got time to see you.
And then one that's willing to work with an individual in a family office that was just recently released from incarceration, which has a lot of stigma. What we found was, Jeff, we were sending the data from prisons to providers. And as soon as I'd send that DOC record, just numerous barriers would come up. Oh, we don't have availability. Oh, we didn't see you on the schedule. So I went out and built the company and built a healthcare system to where we didn't have to send those records externally. We sent them to doctors that we actually vetted, had experience working with this population, and then most importantly, have the passion to do so. And that's what Patient Sortal is today.
Do you have any stories, leaving out names, that can articulate maybe what you've all been able to do?
I mean, our main goal is to provide superior primary care to a population, keep them out of the emergency room for unnecessary ER visits, which is just a huge cost to payers. It's a burden on the returning citizen, and it's a burden just on the healthcare environment altogether. We can talk about stories all the time. We have members enroll every day. We had an individual who was incarcerated for 50 years, was being released. During that 50 years, insulin was prescribed, but I'm pretty sure insulin was developed over that 50-year period while they were incarcerated, right? So this person has lived the last 50 years during incarcerated, comes out, is transferred to a new state, and then released without any insurance on insulin. The last week of incarceration was practicing Ramadan. And since they weren't eating, they didn't need their insulin. And upon release, they said they weren't taking their insulin. So there was no need to give them insulin upon release. This patient came to us and said, look, I have immediate needs and I have long-term needs. How can you help? And we just get them seen right then and there, assessed. We have their medical records, thousands and thousands of pages for 50 years of incarceration of medical records. We screen through those, we do analytics, and then we assess, we treat, and we build a care plan for these individuals. And that happens every day.
We're going to switch over to this idea of capital. So you said Medicare and Medicaid. I mean, how does one returning citizen have health care? Who pays
Absolutely.
For all that?
There's 28 states that have expanded Medicaid to low-income populations. When you're incarcerated, your benefits are stripped. You don't have your Medicaid, you don't have your Medicare, you don't have insurance. Upon release, you are auto-enrolled or eligible for Medicaid. You're under 65 or Medicare if you're over. There are several patients that are duals. That's a whole other story. And in those 28 states, the government pays for free health care for these individuals. There are co-pays like $1 for prescriptions that are generic, $3 for non-generic, and smaller fees like that, which we have a nonprofit arm that kind of helps that. You know, to give you another example, Jeff, if you're incarcerated and you're in a wheelchair, when you're released, that wheelchair belongs to the DOC. So we have members come into us saying, I'm getting released in a week. I have one limb. Are you guys going to have a wheelchair for us? We take care of that. We cover that cost. We make sure they have that wheelchair. Simple things like that.
You can answer this question, obviously, from however you want to. But, I look at it and go, you grew up on a farm. You learned how to work hard. Obviously, you're living that out today. You're an entrepreneur, you know, trying to raise capital. You also work in the prison system where, obviously, these men and women don't have much capital coming out. And so a broad question for you is, when did you realize the power of capital and what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was at 7, right? When I opened my first checking account, I knew how to write a check. I knew how to buy things. I knew how to sell things. I knew how to invest, create an ROI. And from that young age, if I wanted a pen knife, it was either I leave that money in my savings account or I dive into it. It wasn't like I went out and got a pen knife. I didn't have an allowance. I didn't have any of that. My brother and sister and I all worked really hard to capture the income we needed to buy things. It's like a funny story. My brother and I started a duct tape wallet company when I was 10 and he was 12 because we wanted a pinball machine. And our parents didn't get it for us for Christmas. They got us gift cards to Walmart. So we went to Walmart, bought every color duct tape that they had. We made order forms and we sold to every kid in our middle school and teacher. And then when we went to go buy the pinball machine, they were sold out. So we have a ping pong table that we still use today.
And it was from that?
You know, yeah, it's from that. So,
you know, you just reminded me of something that I totally forgot. When I was probably 5, 6, 7, I think at the time they call them Polish switchblades. And you would take this a clothes hanger and two lollipop sticks and a rubber band. And basically you connect it so that when you pop it, the popsicle stick, you know, shoots out like a knife. And I actually sold like 20 of those. And I don't remember how much money I made, but it's,
yeah.
You just triggered something like I've never, ever thought about. So that's cool. So at 7 years old, how the heck did that get implanted into your brain? I mean, how did you get to that point where you understood or you, I don't know, that's not the norm today, I don't think.
I don't think it is either, especially difficult now that checking accounts aren't really like through paper-based where you're sitting there actually balancing your checkbook. You know, we'd balance our checkbooks every month. Now it's, you have a plastic card. Rarely people look at their statements and actually go in. It's all automated, you know? So it's very difficult. I mean, I don't have any kids of my own, so I don't know how that looks from a parenting perspective. You might be able to shed some light on that. 7 years old, it was like, I bought one pig, sold it, bought three pigs, sold it, bought five pigs, sold them, you know? So it was just like reinvesting into it. Once my brother turned 18, we just kind of both stepped out of that because he went and started a straw and hay company. And then I started a firewood company. But as soon as one tree fell, I was kind of done with that and went and worked for my brother doing straw and hay. So we kind of moved into that. But we just understood the value of capital and just like reinvesting that and being able to get what we wanted and worked hard for it.
So as an entrepreneur today, any thoughts of the power of capital?
Yeah, I mean, it's necessary, right? What the power of capital gives you is the ability to reach a goal of freedom, which, you know, is like a financial freedom. And with financial freedom, then you can follow your passion. And that's kind of what we do here at Patient Sort of, is like we follow a purpose, and with purpose comes prosperity, but you need capital to grow that prosperity. Things cost money. Everything nowadays costs money.
You know, I've got a senior in college, a junior in college, with inflation and the cost of everything. I mean, unfortunately, who it really hurts is the middle class and those that don't have a lot of capital. So I, whether it's my kids getting out of college or who at least they've got a college degree and presumably will do just fine. But then you translate that down to somebody getting out of prison who probably has been out of the workforce for some time. So the skill sets are probably not where they should be. You got health issues. I mean, it's just the odds are stacked against men and women who are getting out of prison. And so you're attacking one piece of it, which is huge because if their health isn't right, everything else tends to fall apart.
Absolutely. And that's it, right? So, I mean, we hear stories all the time about like you have to take the job available, whether it's a pizza shop where your manager's 16 yelling at you, your payday loan. The stories go on and on. One of the best parts is that we see our patients become self-sufficient, get jobs. We've had patients move out of Medicare into commercial because they've been working 3 months and they're healthy and they have numerous chronic conditions. And without us, I mean, majority of our system is telehealth because we meet the person where they're at. If I'm coming out of incarceration, I can't take off to go to the doctor to meet this technical violation or technical requirement. I meet them where they're at. We get their scripts filled. We do all the things necessary. And they only needed 30 to 60 minutes of an appointment. That's a lunch break, right? These individuals don't have the normal jobs that you and I have available or your kids will.
Yep.
And it's just a reality. So meeting them where they're at. And that allows them to open up those doors.
This concept of stewardship, and I'm sure you could name it other things if you wanted. What does stewardship mean to you?
So I grew up, you know, in a small town through the church. And my dad and mom taught me is like, give back to those individuals through all the good things that the Lord's brought to you. And reach back out and touch the others around you. So just being able to do that, you know, I've had the blessing to achieve what I've done, obtain the knowledge and retain that knowledge and put it towards helping other people. So that's why I'm here. And I think that's like my purpose. That's what stewardship is us. It's just like reaching back out and touching the others. You know, one of the best quotes I've heard recently is like, it says, you treat the neighbor as you treat yourself. But if you don't treat yourself well, then how well are you actually treating your neighbors? That's important.
Yeah. I could go down a whole diatribe here. one of my majors was a psychology major. And so psychology majors tend to do a very good job of focusing on themselves. Especially when you get in the faith community, it's obviously the great commandment of love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor of yourself. And implied in there is exactly, you know, as yourself. And so I think the faith community is always afraid that if you throw in self, you're going to love yourself too much. But the reality is, if you don't have some self-love, self-care, it's hard to do the other things. So
absolutely. Yeah,
completely agree with you. If you could have one dream, if you want to make it two, you can come drew it in your life. What would that be?
You know, this impact investing space, right? It's not donations. It's not, let's see this. Our whole goal with our company is to be a self-sustaining, privately owned company that provides great impact, but great ROI for the founders, the employees, and the shareholders. Our goal is to grow this, meet that, you know, $50 billion opportunity that you mentioned, asked earlier how big this is, through providing just high quality healthcare, and then having an exit in our mind, IPO it to where we can continue to impact these individuals every year, to where we have the freedom, both my parents, my brother and sister, to really just do what we want, whether that's farming, whether that's beef business, whether it's me doing healthcare innovation, that capital, the ability to have capital is no longer a question. And the same thing with our shareholders and our employees, right? If they can check that one box off, what would they follow? What would they do? There's lots of transitions of care that are just completely unmanaged or poorly mismanaged. And then there's this new opportunity that COVID's allowed which is utilizing telehealth on a larger bandwidth. And, you know, bringing that into other populations would be huge. Now, the criminal justice system's kind of going to flush out here with just the 630,000 people incarcerated through prisons in the U.S. Criminal justice systems around the world are a little different, and I'm not an expert there, but we could always go international if there's a need.
I just came back from Monday and Tuesdays at a board meeting at a prison ministry that puts chaplains in jails. And actually, as you were talking, and as bad as the scenario is physically for inmates in the U.S., you know, when you're talking about healthcare and whatnot, I don't know what multiple to put on it, but it is clearly a significant multiple when you go outside the U.S. of the conditions inside of prisons. Just, it's staggering. It's staggering how poor, you know, you sit here in the U.S. and you bemoan how bad it is here, which, you know, it's not, I mean, it's prison, but man, you start getting international, the scenes, the scenarios, unbelievable how poor the circumstances are over there. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know the financial model on that one, but clearly a huge need outside the U.S. as well.
Absolutely.
Anything else you want to share with our listeners before we sign off?
It's been a pleasure, Jeff. I mean, just being connected with you and other faith-based leaders in this space, we all put our heads together here and just kind of reach out and touch our neighbors and kind of drive towards social impact investing where there's real long-term ROI, but financially, but indirect and direct impact through our communities. I mean, we could change the world here. We could do some real cool stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. One of the questions that I often will get asked is, well, can you actually make money and do good?
Yeah.
And my response back to them is, well, every time you make money, are you having to do something bad? And the answer is, of course not. And so what this misnomer, I think that this world is still struggling with, at least here in the U.S., is how do you make money and do good? And then the reality is like they think it's all charity. And you go, no. What you don't understand is if you are not creating sustainable business models, then you ultimately aren't fixing the problem. Yep. You're creating a charity. Nothing wrong with charity. You need them. But there's a reason why capital is trying to figure this out in economic ways, because you can scale it and it's sustainable. Yep. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. And so obviously I'm personally rooting for you, but I think that the more examples that people see of companies that are not only making money, but also making a huge difference in the lives of individuals, they will slowly start to understand that, no, you can make money and do good. So I'm now it's an investment. Yeah. So you can also lose money. I mean, it's not a foolproof deal. But I will tell you personally, my wife and I, feel like it's a privilege to be on this journey to try to use a piece of our capital to make a difference in this world.
Couldn't thank you guys enough. You know, just being connected through partnership with individuals like yourself, you and Shelly, is awesome.
As an entrepreneur myself, I'll reach across the computer screen here and give you a big hug, because I know that the journey you're on is not easy. commend you for jumping out and risking your time, your talent, your treasures. And I know as you've been very persistent in a very appropriate way with me. And so I know what it takes. And so I'm rooting for you. And look, what we're going to do is someday when you have reached whatever success you think is worthy, we're going to get you back on here and let you share all the lives that you've been able to impact, probably both health-wise, but then hopefully also financially as well. So, well, thanks for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new investors find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.